Thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, December 12th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Mugabe swears in his two deputies, Emmerson Mnangagwa and Phelekezela Mphoko, as well as new ministers following a cabinet reshuffle late yesterday.
I can certainly assure you that our agenda, the priority will be to facilitate the work of government through ICTs to ensure that the Zimbabwe agenda for sustainable socio-economic transformation, which is our economic turnaround blueprint, we facilitate all activities under ZimAsset.
Human Rights Watch says the ZANU-PF purge and the announcement of new hardline ministers into the cabinet is a bad omen for human rights in Zimbabwe.
It is clear that the purge is targeting those who are perceived to be reformist, to be pro-re-engagement with the international community.
And the National Constitutional Assembly says it has filed today a court application challenging the appointment of two vice presidents by President Robert Mugabe after he fired his deputy Joyce Mujuru, claiming that she wanted to topple him.
We have submitted our founding affidavit signed by the NC chairperson, Professor Lamu Majoku, and we really just pointing out that the action by President Mugabe is unconstitutional.
President Robert Mugabe today swore in his two deputies, Emmerson Mnangagwa and Phelekezela Mphoko, as well as new ministers following a cabinet reshuffle late yesterday. On top of their vice presidential roles, Mr. Mnangagwa will continue leading the Justice Ministry, while Mr. Mphoko leads the Ministry of National Healing. The new cabinet lineup also includes Simon Kaya Moyo, who was appointed Minister of Economic Planning, and former Foreign Affairs Deputy Minister Christopher Mchangwa, who now leads the newly created War Veterans Welfare Ministry. Mchangwa's wife, Monica, is now deputy to Information and Broadcasting Minister Jonathan Moyo. Opam Chinguri was given the Higher Education Ministry, while Christopher Mshowe is now Indigenization Minister. Mandi Chimene is the new Manicaland Provincial Minister. Former Information Deputy Minister Superman Wanzira now heads the Information Technology Ministry. Studio 7 reports Tungamili Nkomo reached Mr. Mandwanzira and asked him what his priority is.
I wish I would be able to tell you right now because, you know, I've just been sworn in today. I've not had an opportunity to even go and see my new office where I will be working from. I've not had an opportunity to discuss with the permanent secretary, the deputy minister who's there, and the colleagues in that ministry. So it would be a bit unfair for me to start telling you what I'm going to be working on without knowing fully well where other colleagues who have already been doing work in the ministry, how far they've gone in whatever they've been implementing. But I can certainly assure you that our agenda, the priority will be to facilitate the work of government through ICTs to ensure that the Zimbabwe agenda for sustainable socio-economic transformation, which is our economic turnaround blueprint, we facilitate all activities under ZimAsset by ensuring that the ICT infrastructure is in place to ensure delivery and efficiency in any of these projects that are going to be carried out under the turnaround program.
Superman Wanzira is the new Information Technology Minister. Responding, MDCT Secretary General Douglas Monzora dismissed the new cabinet as hopeless.
It is a non-event. It is actually a reshuffling of people who have been proven failures in their various portfolios in government. Very few are new in the government, if any there. These are people who have been involved in the same failed state. If you look at Vice President Mnangagwa and Vice President Mphoko, these are people who have been part of this system for a long, long time. And also, they were not democratically elected. They were just handpicked, which means they were not elected on merit. We do not know how many ZANU-PF people want these people or favor these people. So they are not democratically elected, number one. Number number two, they have been the same, they have been part of the failure of the Zimbabwean state for 34 years. There is absolutely no person who has been appointed in this cabinet who has anything new to add to the state of Zimbabwe.
Anything that this cabinet can do to turn around the fortunes of the country?
Well, if you look at the nature of the Zimbabwean state and how it functions, it revolves around Mugabe. This country still has Mugabe at the helm, the person who is rigid, who fights with everyone over everything. He's still the head of that cabinet. So nothing new is going to come. We would have wanted a cabinet where you would engage other countries, where you would have good relationships with the other political parties in your country.
MDC Secretary General Douglas Monzora speaking earlier on with Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare.
Human Rights Watch says President Robert Mugabe's purging of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and her allies is, quote, a bad omen for rights in Zimbabwe. The rights group says in a statement, for many Zimbabweans, the changes in the ZANU-PF leadership, particularly Mr. Mugabe's presidential endorsement for 2018, reflect a consolidation of his grip on the party and government, a retention of the status quo, and dashes expectations for lasting rights reforms. Human Rights Watch says though newly sworn in Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa recently refused to approve the death sentence for 97 murder convicts, his alleged links to Gukurahundi massacres of the early 1980s stain his record. Human Rights Watch researcher Dewama Vinga tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that he is pessimistic about Zimbabwe's future, especially following the announcement of the new old ministers.
Well, because it is clear that the purge is targeting those who are perceived to be reformist, to be pro-re-engagement with the international community, with the West particularly, and it has rewarded those who are perceived to be loyalists to Mugabe and to be hardliners, in fact, those who will pursue the Mugabe line and maintain the status quo, which then means that really in terms of reforms, there is little to look forward to. And in terms of economic revival, it will be more of the same because Mugabe is firmly in control and those that he has rewarded are precisely yes people or yes men who rubber stamp whatever Mugabe wants together with his wife, who is now part of Mugabe's inner circle.
You are also taking issue with the endorsement of Mr. Mugabe to be the party's 2018 presidential candidate. Why?
Well, because clearly to endorse Mugabe to be the 2018 candidate when he is 94 means that it can only be selfish and personal interest to have a life president in Mugabe, number one, and also to have those around him doing it for selfish reasons. It cannot be to unlock resources. Everyone now is looking into the post-Mugabe era. So to try and say that at 94 Mugabe should take Zimbabwe forward is really to dismiss all attempts at economic revival and to put paid to any efforts to bring in investors.
That was Human Rights Watch researcher Dewama Vinga speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, the National Constitutional Assembly today filed a court application challenging the appointment of Vice Presidents Mnangagwa and Mpoko. NCA spokesman Maduk Chivasa tells Studio 7 that his party also argues in its papers about the constitutionality of assigning Vice President Mnangagwa to the post of Justice Minister. Chivasa says they believe that Mr. Mugabe had no right to appoint the two, arguing that he should have only appointed one deputy instead of the two Vice Presidents. The NCA is citing some provisions of the Constitution which compel the President to appoint his deputies without delay after a general national election. Chivasa tells the Studio 7's Gibbs Dube they have a strong case against the President.
We have submitted our founding affidavits signed by the NCA chairperson, Professor Lavu Majuku, and we really just pointing out that the action by President Mugabe is unconstitutional to appoint two vice presidents. And we are also now saying he also, during today's ceremony where he was appointing cabinet ministers. He also said that the first vice president, Ms. Emmerson Mnangagwa, is also going to double also as legal affairs minister. And we are saying that that is also clearly unconstitutional. There is not such a provision where one person would be in a position to act as the national vice president of the country and also as just an ordinary cabinet minister. So we pointed out that in the same affidavit.
So do you think that you have got any chance of winning this case as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, of course, we've got sound legal arguments in it, and it's quite clear that the president acted unconstitutionally when he today declared the two vice presidents. So it's our belief that the court is going to vindicate us, as NCA. It's the duty of the court to give examination on it.
That was NCA spokesperson Maduk Chivasa speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Some constitutional law experts have also noted that the NCA is a strong case, while others have dismissed it as lacking in merit.
Two more people have been admitted to hospital after an alleged assassination attempt on Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa's life through what the state says is cyanide poisoning at the party's head office in Harare. The alleged attempt was first revealed by President Mugabe at a ceremony to appoint the Presidium and Politburo Thursday afternoon in Harare. Mr. Mnangagwa's secretary, Catherine Magaya, was the first to be hospitalized after collapsing at the office. Yesterday, a driver and a member of the state's security were said to have also been admitted to hospital after the alleged cyanide effects took effect. We spoke to Magaya, who tells Studio 7 that they suspect the vice president's perceived enemies laced the office with the deadly poison to target the new vice president.
Generally, it affects people in three different forms. It can affect people through a gaseous form, that is, if someone breathes it, it then suffocates our cells of oxygen. And, you know, that results in general body weakness, confusion, headaches, dizziness, and so forth. It can also be applied through being deposited in liquids. For example, a soft drink, water, or it can be physically attached to the skin. If it is attached to the skin, our skin absorbs the cyanide, but the effect is generally the same. It deprives the human body, human cells, of oxygen. And depending on the amount of exposure, you can die shortly or over a long period of time.
Yeah, but Dr. Guni, we are talking here of a case where someone walked into an office. We are not hearing about adjacent offices or the whole building being affected. Is that how it works?
Not necessarily, unless if the office itself was airtight. If the room was airtight, then it makes sense that whoever opened the door, when the air rushed in with the opening of the door, then they started breathing the gaseous form of this.
Sorry for the mix-up. That was, in fact, Dr. Frank Guni, a medical doctor, was giving us a medical opinion on the effects of cyanide poisoning. Right now, we give you the interview with Catherine Magaya, Secretary to Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
When I started becoming weak and weak, then people said, let's go to the hospital. So the people were in the office, they said, no, because I was losing power now and I was so dizzy and I couldn't breathe well. Then the people took me to the hospital.
Well, what is the situation? What are the doctors saying?
I think it's better to consult them because I'm not sure because they are just also thinking it was cyanide. And they are treating me for cyanide.
We understand that if they wanted to kill the vice president. Would you know anything about that?
I think so, because so many things have happened in that office. So I think this is the third time. One day when I went in that office, I fell down and you know, the first went behind. Then another day, also, I felt something in my nose like boot. Then I felt dizzy. Then I fell down.
That was Catherine Magaya, Secretary to Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. She spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
the Women and Health Alliance International conducts fistula operations on Zimbabwean women.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The International Criminal Court says Ivory Coast must hand over Simone Gbagbo, the wife of former President Laurent Gbagbo, to face charges of genocide from the country's civil war. The ICC issued a statement today summoning the former First Lady to court, although Ivory Coast has refused to turn her over to the Hague-based tribunal in the past, saying it will try her in a domestic court. She faces charges of crimes against humanity, including murder, rape, and other sexual violence and other, quote, inhumane acts. The Ivory Coast government had submitted a legal challenge to the ICC request for Gbagbo in September. Today's ruling was the defeat of that challenge.
Nigerian officials say two explosions in the central city of Jos have killed at least 31 people. The blast occurred in the same market where a twin car bombing in May left at least 118 people dead. Suspicion for the latest incident is falling on militant group Boko Haram, which was blamed for the May attack.
And the protest against grand jury decisions not to indict white police officers for killing unnamed black men in America came to the steps of the U.S. Capitol today. More than 100 congressional staff members of all races and several lawmakers walked off their jobs and held their hands in the air in a gesture of surrender. A Senate chaplain, Barry Black, called the group a voice for the voiceless. This was the latest in a series of protests in cities across the U.S. against several highly publicized incidents in which unarmed black males died at the hands of white policemen. Protesters have lain down in city streets and department stores and held the so-called die-ins. The MDCT says it will tomorrow be holding two meetings, which will, among other things, look at the resolutions made at the party's October 4 Congress before endorsing them. Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri spoke with Mr. Obid Gutu, the MDCT spokesman, who says the National Council will meet in the morning, followed by the National Executive Council that is expected to pick new portfolio secretaries.
The main item on the agenda of the National Council tomorrow at 10 o'clock Zimbabwe time is to endorse the proposed names that have been put forward by the various provinces and also the 15 nominees who are going to be nominated by the president using the new provision in the constitution. So basically the National Council is going to have an opportunity to formally endorse the new look national executive. So once that has been done, immediately thereafter, the new national executive will go into session and immediately convene its inaugural meeting. So to us, this is actually a very crucial exercise because it will literally kickstart the new MDC and also unveil our new focus going forward, where we are talking of equal opportunities for all.
Some may argue that your party is not doing enough to show that it is a government in waiting.
If people would only know the amount of preparation and planning that is happening behind the scenes, then they would actually give us a medal of honor. When you are strategizing and planning, you don't go on top of rooftops and start blowing your trumpet and say we are doing X, Y, and Z.
We are busy strategizing. We are just about to complete the process of our provincial induction courses or induction programs.
That was MDCT spokesman Obed Gudu speaking to Jonga Kandemiri on the line from Harare.
The Women and Health Alliance International has this week been conducting fistula operations on Zimbabwean women suffering from the medical condition. The program was done in conjunction with the U.S.-based Fistula Foundation and has Ethiopian-based fistula surgeon Dr. Ambaye Wolde Michael of the WAHA performing operations on 15 to 20 women at Parerenyatwa Hospital in Harare. Obstetric fistula is a serious internal organ injury sustained by women during childbirth, which can lead to bladder and skin infections, kidney disorders, and at times death if left untreated. The WAHA officials say women who had their surgery range from a 58-year-old woman who lived for decades with that condition and an 8-year-old young girl who was suspected to have had a fistula after a case of sexual abuse. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Andrew Strang, who's the regional coordinator of the Women and Health Alliance International, who explains the surgeries that are currently ongoing in Harare.
There was one lady who we were very gratified to help called Josephine, who's had a fistula for 28 years. Quite a sad case when their husband leaves them and they're quite isolated for a long period of time. So that was one case. There's a few young ladies, 18, 19, who've had fistulas for less than a year. We're seeing quite a few apostolics. About at least half of them are apostolic. So we tend to see a lot of fistulas from that religion because they choose not to give birth in hospital or clinics, and the girls are married quite young. So that's one prominent demographic.
And of course, you spoke about the social stigmatization that occurs when it comes to this issue of fistula. Can you talk about that and how that impacts the lives of these women?
They end up living quite isolated lives. The smell is inescapable after a while. They try not to drink water because it leaks more, but then when you dehydrate yourself, it just makes the urine more concentrated. And also they're deemed to be cursed in the rural areas. There's a perception that they're cursed or that it somehow is related to a curse. And the husband will very often, in most cases, will leave. And they'll often just end up staying with some family member.
That was Andrew Strang. He's the regional coordinator of the Women and Health Alliance International. He spoke with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
Coming up next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Protesters calling for an end to police brutality and a beginning to better race relations in America have filled the streets in New York, Washington, and other U.S. cities recently, angry over several incidents in which young black men died in confrontations with white police officers and no prosecution taken against the accused police. The cases, stretching from Ferguson, Missouri, to Cleveland, Ohio, to Staten Island, New York, have public officials scrambling to balance the rights of demonstrators to take to the streets and the demands of public safety as some protests turn violent. They also are focusing world attention on the power of local police in America. Under our system of government, authority to enact laws to preserve and protect public safety, health, and welfare is granted to the states. Under this grant, police have three primary functions: maintain public order, enforce state and local laws, and render public service, such as patrolling the community and responding to emergencies. The federal government's lawmaking authority is limited to specific grants of power found in the Constitution. Ours is a system of government checks and balances, and unless constitutional questions arise in a local police action, the check on police power is found in the local and state courts, not Washington. When in the course of an officer's duties, he or she has cause to think that a serious law has been broken, the officer can handcuff and arrest the person, who will be held pending an impartial court hearing on the arrest. If the person in question is believed to be an immediate danger to the officer or the people around them, local laws in most jurisdictions allow the use of deadly force. A significant number of killings by police in such confrontations, however, including the deaths of people who are unarmed, such as in the Ferguson and Staten Island incidents, have raised questions across the country about excessive use of force. that grand juries reviewing the incidents found no wrongdoing by local police has also angered many Americans, upset that the legal system may be broken. This is where the federal government may come in, with its own check on local police power. The U.S. Justice Department may take action if it believes local police cross the line in the exercise of their duties, violating a person's constitutional rights even while he or she may have been breaking local law. Such investigations may be launched in the Ferguson and other cases. The ways that police enforce the laws intended to protect us all have critical implications for our democracy and the quality of life in the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the cabinet reshuffle.
To join the discussion, please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Yes, Chris, you know, in the past, during this week, we have had interesting interviews with the new Vice President, Mr. Emmerson Mnangagwa, and we also spoke with former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. We posted some of the tapes on Facebook, on all social networking sites. So today we are going to give you some of the comments that came from you, the listeners, concerning Vice President Mujuru, and then on Monday, we'll give you other comments concerning Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his colleague, Mr. Mpoko. Chris, what is the first one that you have there?
This one doesn't say it's from... Oh, it's actually from Guruve and... Yes, someone called Success from Guruve. He says, I'm enjoying news that are balanced and unbiased. Keep updating us with what is coming back home.
And we have a comment from Chamnor Wanyoni who says of former Vice President Mujuru that she behaves like Julius Malema. By the time he was fired by the ANC, he wanted his time trying to negotiate, but ANC refused. So she must start to act now. There may have been many ways of going to the State House. And Temba Nyanga says ZANU-PF has a history of vomiting them out and swallowing them back later. Let her play close and around. This is looking at, you know, her being booted out of the office. Let her play close and around. This is Mr. Mugabe's old tricks. He used it on Mr. Ndabaningi Stole and Mr. Nkomo and many more. Anyone who doesn't bootlick or does a little wants to allegedly assassinate him. You must pull your tongue long out and clean it cheerfully. Amen, he says.
And this one is from Kosinati Maposa, who says she should form a party and stop crying over spilled milk. The caliber of people vomited or are wrong enough to challenge ZANU in its own game.
And we have another one from David Mamuto. He says, I personally think Comrade Mugabe did the right thing at the right time to sack Mrs. Mujuru and company. Also, by appointing the two comrades, Mr. Mnangagwa and Mr. Mpoko, every party should abide to certain principles because people cannot do what they want. This is David Mamuto.
Elphas Makoni writes, Mujuru will bounce back.
And Karuma Zondo, right on the last one for today, Chris, says God's case, no appeal. And now we recap today's top stories.
President Mugabe swears in his two deputies, Emmerson Mnangagwa and Phelekezela Mpoko, as well as new ministers following a cabinet reshuffle late yesterday.
Human Rights Watch says the ZANU-PF purge and the announcement of new hardline ministers into the cabinet is a bad omen for human rights in Zimbabwe.
And the National Constitutional Assembly has today filed a court application challenging the appointment of two vice presidents by President Robert Mugabe after he fired his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, claiming that she wanted to topple him.
Just as a reminder to all our listeners, Chris, at this festive season, to please continue sending emails to your mailbag, rather, at studio7@voanews.com so we can read your messages on air. The address, once again, is studio7@voanews.com. So send us your messages to greet your colleagues, your families this festive season. Signing out is Sandra Nyaira, leaving you with Standekile and Ntungameli Nkomo with the Ndebele Bulletin.
And this is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.